that just showing how, like, healing food can be?
There's something inherently sexy about food, like the abundance, the glistening, everything. And so this one, not placing that automatically at the forefront, but, like, counting on you to, like, read into it.
Because I think he even says something along the lines of, like, the way you eat is just beautiful.
Welcome back to Kitchen Tape. I'm Rose Wild.
And I'm Cassie Mendieta, and we are coming live at you with a very special mini episode.
Surprise episode of Kitchen Tape to fit with a cultural moment right now, which is a new film that just came out called The Taste of Things that is all about food and is getting a lot of award buzz. It's a French film.
Yeah.
And
so know that before you go into it. Unlike me, big shocker to me that it was a French film. I didn't look, when you said you wanted to go see this movie, I looked it up and I saw set in 1880. And then I was like, okay, that's all I need to know. And then they started talking and it was just all in French. Not that I'm opposed to French, like I love French things, but I was just like, I would have mentally prepared for this a little differently.
To be reading for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, to like actually be like in it, reading and
you know, though, I think that's a good point, though, because they don't outright advertise it that it's a French film.
Yeah.
The trailers, if you see them, are quite devoid of language, and you're just listening to food moving around and these beautiful sort of magic hour scenes from a chateau kitchen.
Which was so beautiful.
So beautiful.
But there was also not, like, a ton of dialogue that makes the movie being in French, like, an obstacle to overcome to watch it. Like, the dialogue is very minimal throughout the film.
I also noticed that there was no soundtrack.
There was no score.
For the entire film.
I noticed that during the first, like, cooking scene.
Where you could hear everything cooking.
You can hear everything. You can hear the characters breathing. And there's, like, a scene where he's, like, shucking the oysters and he's kind of grunting. And, like, it's very real in, like, how the food is being prepared.
You could hear all the effort. That was the soundtrack.
Because usually when you're watching, like, films and there's food scenes, there's, like, some really, like, romantic backtracking and like, you know,
an epic soaring score because you're about to see this,
and it's like with the fire like blowing everywhere and like because there was a lot of dishes that were like flambéed. There was a lot of fire elements in the dishes throughout this movie. I could like hear what I thought the score would be, but then like it really hit me that there was no score throughout like any piece of the movie.
Yeah, I kept expecting it to come in during the more like narrative parts of the film, but I'm not even sure you could get through like a standard song length of instrumental scoring before we were back in the kitchen cooking something. And it really did give you the feeling like you were in that kitchen.
Yeah, like you were sitting at the table watching the whole thing kind of come
very
together.
Like fly on the wall kind of situation, which was interesting. Before going into the movie, I had read that for the director, who's Vietnamese, so there's lots of French background in that as being a former colony, he really wanted to show the real-time cooking of food. Which
he sure did. Sure did.
Yeah, because in most films, even films that are about food and not ones that have like some amazing feast we remember as a moment in a film, which I think sort of splits food films, it's always the dramatic moments they do in quick succession. Like cooking is almost always a montage in over other films.
Yeah.
And this was so dramatically slowed down that after what I thought was like 45 minutes.
Which was just cooking the first meal.
Just cooking the first meal. I was like, I don't know how this film is going to tell a story in another 45 minutes.
Well, good thing it was 2.5 hours long.
Yeah. But it was also such a small story, which I thought was like interesting layered on with like the subtlety of the food that they were producing too. We didn't have like the passionate food-based films like Water for Chocolate or Chocolat, where like someone's cooking something and then someone immediately gets a rush of emotion and then like the plot takes off. This was very much everyday cooking and these people who obviously are in love but very, very French and restrained.
But yeah, it was very much like fly on the wall, you said. And I appreciated that, and it like watching the movie I appreciated how slow like cooking and eating was, mm-hmm. like, during that time period.
It
took all day, and there was that scene where they're, like, reading the menu, and they read out 14 dishes, and he's like, okay, he's like, that's the three, starters.
That's three courses.
And he's like, okay, and now on to the mains, and lists another, like, 15 dishes, and they talk about how, like, oh, this meal was, like, a whole day and a whole night.
I mean, I think all the menus stood out because they would start by saying, this menu is three courses. Mm-hmm. And I think for you and I, we're like, okay, we're going to hear a salad, a main dish, and a dessert.
Yeah.
And then they would, like, keep going. Mm-hmm. And it was hard for my brain to understand initially that they were different dishes. I was just like,
I thought it was like one plate. Yeah. Also, like, speaking of plating, like, each dish was so beautifully, like, plated with care, as it was, like, during that first scene, you're watching Eugenie. You're watching her, like, cook the meal, and then it's being sent out, like, dish by dish to the men who are just, you know, enjoying the meal. And, like, she plates everything with, like, such care, and, like, mm-hmm. it's just really beautiful.
I just kept trying to square that with, like, our idea of portion control nowadays. And, like,
that's the thought I had. I was like, That's a lot of food.
I mean, can you imagine going to a modern restaurant and then being like, this is a three-course tasting menu, and then you get 14 full dishes, not bites.
Yeah, they were.
And then they're like, okay, and now the second course.
Well, actually, I went to a birthday dinner at Elefante, and we did, like, a tasting menu, and it was like that. I was like, damn, this is a lot of food. And then they were like, oh, yeah. At that point, we had, like, starters. And then we had, like, two different pastas and three different pizzas. And they were like, well, now it's time for your proteins, like, fish and meat. And I was like, oh, my God, this is, like, a marathon. Like, I think I'm so used to just eating very American, where it's just, like, I'm going to eat this one dish and this is dinner. And, like, seeing how food used to be served, where it was, like, every meal was, like, a whole event.
Well, not every meal. I mean, obviously, there's a class aspect here. Oh,
definitely, yeah. I would not be eating like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that our ancestors ate like that. But I feel like on the opposite side, you have those restaurants where people go and they're eating foam and air for 28 dishes. But on those tasting menus, it's called a 28 course. So yeah. I think it was very funny to me to hear these terms of art that we think maybe take for granted and then have them be so richly and oddly defined. But I think the two, and there was a bunch of dishes that I was like, oh, I want to make that. Like the crayfish pie in the beginning.
I was like, I need that. That was
gorgeous. There was a couple other small things where I was like, oh, I might make that. So, like, the food was a very inspiring aside, but there was two scenes that stood out to me as being very sexy, very spicy for such a subdued movie. And I think that when you were talking about food movies, like, there's something inherently sexy about food, like mm-hmm. the abundance, the glistening, everything. And so this one, not placing that automatically at the forefront, but, like, counting on you to, like, read into it, had some, like, standout moments. And the first one was the quail scene where the five men sit together mm-hmm. and eat the ortolan,
mm-hmm.
These quails that had been basted,
mm-hmm.
and they put these napkins over their head. And my initial thought when they did this was they were going to, like a fine wine, take in the bouquet and then
take them off,
eat like a normal person. And instead, they sit there with these napkins over their head, sucking and crunching, not looking each other in the eye, before finally removing them, and there's, like, almost no evidence of the carcass, mm-hmm. which I felt came across as very erotic and charged and naughty and a little uncomfortable to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like noises like that, so...
Well, I think that's the thing, you know? Like, I will admit that I like watching someone suck all the meat off a bone. There's something, like, very sumptuous about it. They're mm-hmm. getting it, right? Mm-hmm. But doing it behind a curtain.
Feels sinful.
Feels like there's a little bit of that, like, Catholic Church shame there.
I think because we were talking about that scene while we were walking to the car, and then I looked up the dish because I was like, why do they throw a napkin over the head? And it's exactly that, because it's, A, they want to, like, smell the dish the
entire
time.
Have it be all-consuming.
Because it's, like, I think it said that it's, like, cooked in cognac or, like, finished with cognac. And, but so they want to preserve that smell while they're eating, but also they don't want to be seen by God doing this, like, very carnal act of, like, because I, from what I read, you eat the entire bird, bones and all.
Yeah, there was nothing
left. It sounded
left.
Like it. It's, yeah. Yeah. Also, in 2020, that dish was priced at 180 euros for just one bird.
Where?
I think it said France, somewhere in France.
Oh, so it's a real thing. Mm-hmm. That's funny. I wonder what else we're hiding from God behind a white napkin with. So easy to fool him.
You got me. I can't see under the white cloth. God damn it.
It's like God's a toddler somewhere.
It's like the boogeyman. Like if you throw your sheets over your head, the boogeyman can't get you.
Yeah, he can only come for you if he like sees a foot out. Mm-hmm. Smells it.
Yeah.
So smells God the taste of flesh.
Only judge you if you are eating in plain
view. If you're
view.
Not under a white sheet.
Yeah, all it takes is a white napkin to like.
But then like not only... Like, maybe 4 minutes later, our main character is cooking for the cook, the other main character, Juliette Binoche, who plays her beautifully. And he's like, can I watch you?
So eagerly, too. And, like a dog, like, kind of circles around the chair before sitting down with his glass of wine.
Totally.
And he's like...
And I gotta say, again, another kink of mine, like, I really like watching people eat food because I feel like when you ask them to describe it, there's often this, like, expectation I feel like they're trying to meet of their, like, their own ability to communicate or, like, making you feel good. But, like, watching someone eat is very intimate.
You can tell.
And it was so funny that he had gone from this, like, hide your sin situation in an orgy of men eating these chickens to watching her eat a chicken with such adoration. Yeah.
Because I think he even says something along the lines of, like, the way you eat is just beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, so, no knock against Juliette, but it seemed pretty standard. So, obviously, it was a love thing. This was our, like...
Which he loved her for 20 years,
yeah,
so I get it.
This was our sexy... But I thought they were so funny paired right next to each other that, like, even with food, we see the grotesque and the divine, right? And through these two scenarios where they're still eating a bird.
Yeah,
I was trying to fit this movie into, like, the canon because I love films with food. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's this whole chunk of, like, coming of age for women films that are, like Water for Chocolate, like I've already mentioned, Mystic Pizza, Marie Antoinette, where, like, food is about, like, lushness and innocence and, like, purity. And then you have, like, the men one where it's a lot more, like, inherently violent and kind of competitive. Like, I think of, like, Big Night and... Boiling Point, where we're really going into a kitchen, and you are going into those montages of people just like knives cutting.
It's like fast. It's
flame.
Like fast and loose in this.
Yeah. So yeah, but it does seem to defy like where to place it in the canon, because you also have the young apprentice.
Yeah.
Who's sort of coming of age by having a perfect palate. And then I questioned the love even at the end, because like she was like, "Am I your wife or your cook?" He says, "Cook." And she seems relieved and grateful. And yet once they get him out of his depression, the minute he seems to have a good dish...
He's like...
He has
Eugenia
a new cook.
Who? Eugenia who? Let's
exactly.
Go get this new
so
cook.
I was
yeah.
like, oh, well, is that so good? Because we've just replaced the cook.
Or is that just showing how, like, healing food can be? Because it kind of gives... The movie gives this, like... idea that he was just like so beyond
reeling, yeah,
and he like lost the love of his life, his like companion in the kitchen,
but cooking,
yeah, and then, you know, he has this dish that like you see the like light come back to him. But also something I noticed during the movie is they talk about Pauline, like one day she'll invent a new dish. Mm-hmm. And that was something I just like don't think about anymore. Like the invention of a new dish, like something that becomes a classic, like a vol-au-vent or like ortolan. Like these things are classics. Mm-hmm. And like,
but someone was making them at one point. Yeah, like, and inventing someone them.
Like developing and inventing it. And I don't really think of dishes like that anymore. Like, of course, there are a bunch of amazing cooks and chefs who are like creating wonderful, amazing dishes. But I feel like not as many of them enter like the standard of cooking. You know,
well, maybe
I mean?
We're like, not old enough for it to have entered the standard, you know, because I think that like if you go back to the 1880s, what we're talking about in terms of invention is really the product of colonization and expansion, right? Mm-hmm. Having access to more ingredients. Mm-hmm. But really what that was fusion cooking with an erasure of origin, right? But now we call it fusion cooking and we are calling out what cultures erasure it comes is. From mm-hmm. and what erasure is. And so it's less about we're not inventing a new American cuisine. We're inventing a way of crossing borders. Mm-hmm. But in the same way, I think that France was not really, if we're being honest, not inventing its own cuisine when it made things like pot-au-feu, which most of the stuff in it is like potatoes and carrots, or cassoulet, another French classic, which is beans, all of which came from the New World. Mm-hmm. So none of that was possible without colonization. And yet we think of them as incredibly French things, yeah. But really it's French Native made. American, mm-hmm. or, you know, so I think it's funny because we think of fusion cuisine as something new, but it's always been happening. We're just being a little more upfront about what's being fused mm-hmm. instead of isolating it out for its ingredients.
Oh, the proposal scene I found very endearing. Usually I don't like the idea of like
A ring in food?
Yeah, a ring in food. And like, yeah. It just feels like a choking hazard.
It does feel like a choking hazard.
Also, I feel like every time I see a dish that has like a wedding ring or like, you know, an engagement ring on it, it's just like awkwardly placed. But yeah. Like the care he put into like crafting this dish and then hiding it under this like tulle.
Yeah.
Sale he had going
I loved
on.
Watching Make of the Tweel because it was mm-hmm. the only moment in the whole film where we saw him mess up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sort of in real time. Like, yeah. I feel like that was a take. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, okay, in this one, you're going to mess it up. Mm-hmm. He was trying.
Yeah,
and it didn't
I think
work.
I think he had to mess one up to show, like, how much he cared about this specific dish being nothing less than perfect.
Oh, you thought that was like acting intentional? Yeah. I thought that was for sure like the first 29 takes and then the 30th one they got it. They decided post to like, we're going to put this in.
We're going to keep it. We spent 2 days
really
filming
tried.
This. Yeah. No, I do think it was like he knew what he was doing. He knew he was about to propose to her.
Have you ever been asked to hide an engagement ring in food?
No.
I have done it 3 times at different restaurants. It is always so awkward. I always think she's going to choke on it. And then I think, well, what if she says no? Will she be mad at me?
Yeah. Will she not eat the dessert? Because that's also like...
Yeah. Like, did you ruin this for the both of us?
Do I have to take this dish off the menu because it's like tainted now?
Now it wasn't lucky. I've had to put it in champagne, classic. The one I was most against but eventually overruled was putting it in a pot de creme because I was
like
for
in
sure
it?
She will just swallow this.
In it.
Yeah.
Like
in it.
You put it in
like,
the dish.
Like we got the
and
ring
you...
in the morning and I poured the custard on top. And I was like, no one's thinking this through because even if she doesn't swallow it, she's gonna need a napkin
wash it
to cover
like,
her face.
Or like
to
suck it.
The pudding off this ring.
Also,
before
like,
saying
just, like,
yes.
That one feels so risky. Because also trusting a kitchen staff with your engagement ring.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
No.
I could have run off.
Yeah. You could have run off. You could have lost it. You could have dropped it down the drain. You know.
Someone could have stolen it off my speed rack. The cookies
also,
went missing. Who's
okay.
to say a diamond carrot went?
Also, like, hey, can you hide this in a pot au creme? What if someone, like, shuffles all the pot au cremes that you have around?
Oh, it was
and
very
then
hard to keep it tagged.
Yeah.
Sure.
But someone's, like, oh, what is this piece of tape on here that says wedding ring? That's weird. Let me take it off and let me serve this to someone. Like, there's so many variables here. I don't know if I would
trust.
Yeah,
I wouldn't recommend it. I think the only one that worked, but I thought was the most ballsy, someone wanted to propose at the top of the meal. I think very ballsy.
That's ballsy as hell.
Right? Very ballsy. You don't have them a little food drunk so that they think you're a better match. But his idea was to put the wedding ring on some grissini. So it was just slipped into a bouquet of bread.
Okay.
And that was like really nice. And she found it by, because I definitely watched from around the corner, pulling out a breadstick and seeing one right there. And I was like, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
Make sure it's clearly visible, not caked through stuff.
Baked into a cake.
And luckily she said yes, so they had a wonderful meal after that. But I was shocked that this was still something we did. If you did swallow an engagement ring, would you want to wear it after you pass it?
Because one of us is going to have to sift through literal shit to get it. And I don't know if I would ever be able to,
be able to not remember
that. Look at my hand and be like, that is the only memory I'm going to have with this ring, not anything that came before or after.
Yeah, I'm not hearing anything to recommend this move, so let's take it out of our playbook, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Ladies.
Mm-hmm. No more rings.
Ladies can propose, too.
Yeah.
Just not in food. yeah, so thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed our pop quiz, movie-themed
episode. And if you watched The Taste of Things, let us know what you thought about it.
Yeah, send us an email. We'd love to know if you also felt like you wouldn't want to watch the napkin scene with your parents.
And if you've been proposed to through food, what was your experience? We want to know that a little more than if you liked the movie.
I want more stories. We want more evidence that this is either a terrible way to do things, or tell us your success story.
I mean, I prefer a horror story just because, you know, that'll be a fun thing to say on air, but if it went great, I guess, let us know how that went.
Great's good too. Maybe it's not even about the food. Maybe it's like finding the perfect thing, like maybe nachos.
Oh.
That's where you propose.
Mm-hmm. We have to figure out
the cash, but it's crunchy, so you know you're going to be really feeling something. We'll get to the bottom of this. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week at our regularly scheduled episode drop on Tuesdays.
And as always,
eat cute.
Be cute.
Thank you for joining us this week on Kitchen Tape. Our theme music is created by Dan Crabtree. You can subscribe on Spotify and Apple to be notified when we release new episodes every other Tuesday. If you enjoyed this week's episode, we'd love it if you left us a review. If you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, contact us on social media. You can reach Rose at @TRoseWild and Cassie at @IBakeMistakes or email us at kitchentapepod@gmail.com. Catch you next time on Kitchen Tape Podcast.